What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
That was Lolo Jones talking about the IOC's decision to close it down and postpone the Olympic Games, originally scheduled to take place. I believe the start date was July 24th in Tokyo this summer, and now been postponed. Hopefully sometime in the next year they'll be able to get that done next summer in Tokyo and move ahead with the Olympic Games at that point. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic taking you through this Wednesday morning. And Adam, you know, we were kind of talking about it earlier this week. We figured at some point closing down the Olympic Games this summer and moving them back was going to be inevitable. We saw Team Canada come out on Monday and say, hey, you know what? We're not sending any of our athletes to the Games. It's just not worth the risk. It's not worth everything that would be involved in sending those guys and girls out to compete in the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Maybe that we figured that would be a domino effect for other countries. That decision was taken out of their hands. I think the Olympic Committee and the IOC made the right call, really the only call they could have made during this process.
Oh, for sure. The idea of the Olympics happening just seemed way too risky. And you look at some of the numbers that have been coming out about how much this Olympics delay could cost Japan. There's a story in the Associated Press that it could cost Japan $5.7 billion. But you look at the athletes' village, right, where all of the Olympians are housed during the games. That's 11,000 Olympians and staff, 4,400 Paralympians and staff, in close quarters, at a time where we're supposed to not be in close quarters with each other. It would be a really bad idea to have, so many people confined to a small area at this time in what we're facing in this world. Now, there are athletes who have been training their entire lives for these specific games,
yeah,
who may not have the opportunity to participate next year, which is what they're doing. I think one of the more interesting things is that while they're delaying the Olympics by 1 year, they're still going to refer to them as the 2020 Olympics,
yeah,
even though they're happening in 2021. But there are athletes who are participating or who were going to participate in these games this summer who may not have an opportunity to do so. Or maybe there were veteran athletes who were going – this was going to be their last Olympics. And 1 year can change – significantly, an athlete's lifespan. So it is going to be, the end of the line for some athletes, and that's going to be hard. But I think for the benefit of safety and having so many athletes and so many people confined to a small area for 3 or 4 weeks, this was the only way the IOC could go in this situation.
Nobody knows the Olympic Games better than Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian of all time. He spoke out on the decision by the IOC to postpone the Olympic Games. Here's what Michael Phelps had to say.
I mean, like all of us, it's crazy. Obviously I'm still at a loss of words, but I think, we really have to take it seriously. And this is something that isn't going to go away on its own. We all have to work together in order to follow these specific guidelines to make sure that we're all staying healthy. And I can say in the Phelps household, mom had him outside today. Nicole was out there with them teaching and doing these different activities that the teachers from school passed along. And they were having a blast. So they're loving life. We have a little gym in our garage, so I'm able to still get my workouts in. And we're homebodies naturally, so this is something that's pretty convenient for us. It's been crazy all day, because I've gone kind of back to the last three Olympics and kind of put myself in their shoes. And it's almost too much to take on, because you really work up, to these 4 years or through these 4 years to get ready for this event, this this meet, whatever the event that you're getting ready for. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we're going to postpone it for a year. I think the hardest thing is really understanding that the whole training cycle now gets completely changed. And also I think that one thing is really going to show is a lot of mental health struggles, I think, are really going to come from this. And I hope that everybody is getting the help and the care that they need.
Interesting point by Michael Phelps there as he's talking about the Olympic Games being postponed. Like, if you're training for this, you've been kind of preparing, and Lolo Jones talked about this as well. You've been kind of preparing and doing the best you can while the social distancing measures have been put in place. You still have to train because up until yesterday, the Olympic Games officially were still on for these athletes. So, you know, being able to postpone this and push it back a year, that's going to have an effect on some of these athletes. I mean, a lot of these Olympic sports, once you get into like the 27, 28, 29 years old range, you're almost considered old in some of these sports. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of an impact that has, pushing this back maybe a year on some of these athletes who are right kind of on that fringe area in terms of how old they are.
Right, and Michael Phelps can speak to that.
Yeah.
For sure. He continues to participate in the Olympics, but he's not getting any younger. How old is David Phelps? Does anyone know off the top of their head?
Michael Phelps, he's
Michael
34.
Phelps, David Phelps. Michael Phelps, sorry. I said David Phelps. I don't know who it's David okay. Phelps is, but Michael Phelps. David Phelps might be a great person, but
Could
Michael
be.
Phelps
is.
Is 34 years old. So, you know, I don't know what the lifespan of the career lifespan of a swimmer is, but I have to imagine that Michael Phelps won't be participating in many more Olympic Games.
Well, he's done, isn't he? I thought he retired.
Oh, he may have retired. See, I don't know anything about Michael Phelps. I'm calling him David Phelps.
Okay.
He's one of those athletes I only pay attention to once every 4 years.
Well, Lolo Jones is 37, and she was going to compete in the Olympics this year, and she kind of said that, you know, now I have to kind of pump the brakes a little bit and see how I feel next year, because I may not be ready for next year.
Right.
You know, because I'm going to be a year older than what I was. So, that's the difficult part, is for the veteran people and then the people that, quite frankly, this could have been their last Olympics, and some people who this was going to be their first Olympics and their first real big opportunity at, you know, getting into the sport that they love so much and finally getting some recognition for it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, what's interesting about the Olympics is oftentimes, you know, I will say that, you know, I like watching the Olympics. I like watching the more obscure sports. But oftentimes specifically the Summer Olympics, the sport that I watch most intently is basketball. And, you know, most of the time the basketball team is made up of, NBA stars. So they participate in the Olympics, but they still have their NBA seasons. There are a lot of athletes who – this is their showcase. This is the one time every 4 years that their sport is seen on a worldwide platform. They may not have leagues necessarily. You know, I don't believe there are any professional swimming leagues, but then again, I called Michael Phelps David Phelps, so what do I know? But but there are no professional swimming leagues, so this is their opportunity to showcase their talents to the world and make a career. So, you know, if not for the Olympics, a lot of these athletes would not have, you know, have an avenue to pursue their dreams. So, you know, that's why I think about those athletes more. You know, you think about the NBA, for example, there are going to be players who are going to be able to participate next year because, you know, it doesn't matter. They're still young. They're still in the primes of their careers. But for some of these other athletes who participate in some of the more obscure sports, this might be it for them. And it's going to be hard, as Michael Phelps said, for some of those athletes to handle that. And hopefully they are getting all of the help that they need if it becomes much more difficult. And also, our fearless leader, Ryan Porthes, texted me to tell me that David Phelps is a quality MLB relief pitcher. That I also didn't know. But thank you for telling me.
Ryan Porth comment of all time.
I wonder if he pitches for the Cincinnati Reds.
I'm sure if he has at some point, he's probably given up a significant amount of home runs. You look at the date right now, that it's undetermined in 2021 when the Olympic Games are going to take place. So, like, that's what I'm interested in. And you mentioned the basketball team, Adam. Like, if you're USA Basketball, and let's say, and I don't know this obviously, but let's say they start the Olympic Games in May next year. Well, if you got like LeBron and Kawhi still battling it out in the playoffs in May, you know, all these different players throughout the league and the NBA still going through the NBA playoffs next May, like how does that affect basketball in the Olympics? So it's not like LeBron's going to like leave the Lakers and go play for Team USA during the Olympic Games in the middle of a postseason run. So I'm interested to see like when they firmly schedule what the date's going to be next year in 2021. What is it going to look like? Do they go back to the July date? Do they start it earlier in May or in June? That part's really fascinating to me how that's going to work out.
And my colleague at The Athletic, Joe Varden, who writes about the NBA, had a story yesterday. Tokyo postponement could mean no U.S. NBA stars at the 2021 Olympics. And he said the move to delay the Olympics, combined with the uncertainty of when the current NBA season will end as well as the following one, seems likely to lead to fewer or no NBA players participating in the 2021 Summer Games. Jerry Colangelo, the Team USA managing director, said, "I'll cross that bridge when that information comes to me from the NBA." So it is possible that there might not be any NBA players at the 2021 Olympics, if that is indeed the case, because of how the coronavirus has affected not only this NBA season, but next NBA season as well.
It's probably just going to be like a depleted roster. Like when they competed for the World Championships,
right,
it was a bunch of guys. Like a Plumlee was on the team, and then that's
don't
how,
be knocking the Plumlees.
Hey, a Plumlee was on an Olympic U.S. basketball
don't be
team.
The
that
Plumlees.
Is not good.
Which one? Adam. There's like 12 of them.
It was one of the
it was
the
probably Mason.
It was the good one.
It was
the
Mason
one that's
Plumlee.
Actually playing well in the league. I think it was Miles or Mason. One
personally,
of the two.
Personally, I believe that the U.S. team could win the Olympic gold medal with just Zion Williamson. So.
Of course you think.
Of course I do. And the Plumlee. And we'll throw a Plumlee in there.
We'll throw a Plumlee in there.
We'll throw all the
Plumlees. Anybody who went to Duke, just get the Duke basketball team to go play in the Olympic
Games.
That's
what I'm saying.
Adam will be happy.
And Coach K can come out of retirement to coach, and we're all good. We'll win the gold medal. There you go. Problem solved, guys.
There we go. When we come back, do we think the Preds would have made the playoffs this year? And what would have happened to the roster if they didn't? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Adam, you know, the Preds ended the season with a pause right now. They're in a playoff spot. It's been a very up and down roller coaster ride of a season. And you and I were talking on the Smash Brothers last week. It kind of feels like this season has been like 3 years long. Like it just
yes.
seems like even before the pause, like it just seemed like it was so many different seasons kind of all wrapped up in one between the hot start they got off to, the coaching change with Peter Laviolette. The kind of the ride since then that they've been on, Ryan Ellis's injury, just a whole bunch of different things have happened with this Predators team before the pause of the NHL season. So do we think they would have made the playoffs? They were starting to play a little bit better. They'd won three games in a row, two big wins over the Stars, a win against the Montreal Canadiens before the NHL decided to pause their season. Do we think the Predators would have made the playoffs? My answer to that is yes. I think they would have been in one of those wild card spots. And look, at the time, catching Dallas was not outside of the realm of possibility, but just based on the way the Predators were playing as of late, and specifically the way UC Saros was playing, I do think the Predators would have made the playoffs.
Well, according to our Dom Lechizen, I always mess up his name, Dom Lechizen. Anyway, he is our statistical analyst on The Athletic, and at the time of the pause, he had the Predators at a 68% chance to make the playoffs. Now, in the during the pause, he has now gone on and simulated the NHL season day by day, and it has not looked good for the Predators based on his simulation. His simulation said the Predators would have missed the playoffs and would have lost a lot of games down the stretch that would have prevented them from making the playoffs, just based on what he has on his website, on our website, in his simulation. Anyway, the thing that perhaps gives me a bit of pause, to use the word again, something that gives me pause about the Predators' chances of making the playoffs is what was their remaining schedule down the stretch. They had 13 games remaining in the regular season when the season was paused. 10 of them were against teams that were either in a playoff spot or no more than 4 points out of the race. So they were only playing three teams that were really out of it, and those three teams were the Los Angeles Kings, the Montreal Canadiens, and the Chicago Blackhawks. Every other game was against a team that was either in a playoff spot or just outside of the race. And also, eight of those 13 games were back-to-backs. So they had probably one of the tougher remaining schedules in the Western Conference, if not the NHL, at the time of the pause. So I lean towards, yes, they would have made the playoffs, but I think it would have come down to possibly the last game of the season, which would have been against the Minnesota Wild at Bridgestone Arena. It may have taken until game 81 or 82 for them to clinch a playoff spot. I think it would have been a tough road, but I think they would have squeaked in by the end.
So let's just say, for the sake of argument, they didn't make the playoffs down the stretch. And look, this is a conversation.
Did we lose Robbie?
They do get into the playoffs and start from scratch.
Yeah, that is a good question. And I did a story yesterday on The Athletic, the five biggest what-ifs about the 2019-2020 Predators that could go unanswered. And question number four was, if they hadn't made the playoffs, would there have been a roster overhaul this summer? Now, here is where I think things get a bit complicated. I have to imagine that there are teams in the NHL that are looking at this season, whether it's postponed or potentially canceled, as cover to avoid making difficult decisions. Now, I'm not sure if David Poile would fall under that category, but it is possible, though, that, like many general managers in the NHL, that the unknown could have had some sort of influence on David Poile's thinking. Because, as we've been discussing, the Predators were playing better under John Hines. They were in a playoff spot at the time of the pause, but they still had too many players this season who did not live up to their expensive contracts. And I wonder if the season would have continued and they would have missed the playoffs, if that sting of missing the playoffs may have forced David Poile to renovate the core of the team. Whether that means someone like Victor Arvidsson or Ryan Johansson, being traded in order to shake things up. Because we sat there, or we stood there rather, at the end of the trade deadline, and David Poile told us that he decided to, quote-unquote, keep the band together. And I think that decision was met with much skepticism. And if the Predators would have missed the playoffs, there was no way that David Poile could have sold that vision again during the offseason. So I honestly think that he may be spared the difficult decision of renovating the team if necessary, if there is no season, or if they make the playoffs, because we did not get to see what really happened down the stretch.
I think if there is no season, that's going to be the interesting point. I think if they make the playoffs, it's then going to be contingent on what they do in the playoffs. Like, if you make the playoffs, and I understand there's a long break, and really it could be a total crapshoot if they're able to come back and play in these playoff games. But if you make the playoffs, if you're the Predators, you get your training camp in, your mini camp, whatever you want to call it, you come back and you play in the playoffs, and you lose in the first round, I still think if you're David Poile at that point, you evaluate what happened before the pause, kind of the up and down nature that took place there, and then you evaluate what happened once you eventually did come back and resume the playoffs. If you're out in the first round, I still think there's some decisions you have to make if you're David Poile about this team and what it looks like next year. Maybe you're still willing at that point to deal one of these bigger name players and reshape the structure of your roster a little bit. I think if the season doesn't come back and it's canceled as a whole, then it's an interesting spot because you don't really know what to do at that point. Do you just go based off what you saw throughout, 66, 67, 68 games of the season? Or have you seen enough at that point, if you're David Poile, to still entertain the idea of making a trade? And that's going to be an interesting decision he's going to have to make, I think, regardless of the way this NHL season plays out, whether they come back or whether they don't.
Yeah, and we've talked about this at length as well. When you think about this team, if it needs some sort of facelift, the Predators are going to have a hard time because of the amount of money and term that are tied up into these players that we're talking about, like Ryan Johansson or Kyle Turris or Victor Arvidsson. There's a lot of money and length of those contracts. Those are not going to be easy contracts to move if David Poile were to go that route. It would require them to throw in sweeteners and end up on the wrong side of those deals. It might require David Poile, for the first time in his career, to retain salary in a trade. The Predators would not come out on top in those situations. But if they felt they needed to shake things up, you might have to bite the proverbial bullet there. So, you know, the Predators are probably in need of some sort of renovation, but it's because of their contractual situation. And also keep in mind, the salary cap is up in the air because of the stoppage. We were talking about potentially seeing a increase, I think, somewhere between $84 and $88 million. That might not happen this year. It might stay the same. It might only be an incremental increase in the salary cap. That will complicate things too. But, you know, there are a lot of people who would like to, a lot of fans that would like to see this team do something significant to this roster, but it's not going to be easy when you consider how much money has been invested in the players that people want this team to trade.
Adam, we talked for the last few years, really ever since they made the run to the Stanley Cup final, about this team, their window to win a championship, how we think that they've been in it for a long time, maybe, and have extended it with the core that they've locked up. Now that we've seen kind of the way the last two seasons have gone, losing in the first round against the Stars, the up and down nature of this season, including a coaching change, where do we kind of evaluate where the Predators are in terms of their window to win a championship?
Oh, man, the concept of a window, it's hard to discuss in the NHL, because then you look at a team like St. Louis last year, right? I mean, they were the last place team, of course, as we know. In January, you know, perhaps they were looking to be in the same boat as the Predators, and then they win the Stanley Cup and they were leading the Central Division when the season was paused. So things change very quickly, but you look at where this team is, you look at how old they are. You know, I know that Pekka and Dan Hamhuis skew the average, they're the outliers, but they are the oldest team in the NHL, or at least they were at the beginning of the season. You know, a lot of the money that we are talking about that are tied up in players like Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, you know, those players are not in the primes of their careers. I mean, if they are, they're near the end of the primes of their careers. They don't really have a lot of players that are right in their primes. Remember, after, you know, other than Dante Fabbro, this team, I believe, does not have any players on its roster under the age of 24. I mean, UC Saros is 24. I believe Dante Fabbro was either 20 or 21. So these it might have changed near the end, but for most of the season, you know, Dante Fabbro was the youngest player on this team at 20 or 21. You know, you're not going to win for very long when your youngest player is that old comparatively. You know, it's time for this team to start getting those contributions from entry-level players. And we've talked about this, whether it's someone like Eli Tolvanen or someone like Rem Pitlick, or you see the season that Philip Tomasino had before the Canadian Hockey League decided to cancel its season the other day, had 100 points this season. I think it was 40 goals, 60 assists. You need players like that on your roster sooner rather than later if you're the Nashville Predators. And that's going to go a long way in determining just how much longer this team can compete for a Stanley Cup.
When we come back, we've talked a whole lot about the NBA and the NHL and even the NFL about how the coronavirus has affected their seasons. What about Major League Baseball? How significantly do we expect the coronavirus to affect their season? That's next. But first, rocknashville.com is your community resource page brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our own homes, we'll get through this, Nashville, like we do everything else together. Go to rocknashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. We'll be right back. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Buster Olney of ESPN talking about really a lot of possibilities that face MLB in the baseball season that is to come, we assume, at some point down the road here. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Adam, we spent a lot of time talking about the NBA and the NHL and their seasons coming to a pause because, of course, they were reaching the end of their seasons, the playoffs just around the corner. Well, the MLB season is not even scheduled to have started yet, and they have already made the decision to push it back. And obviously we have no idea when they're going to be cleared again to play baseball. Now, I guess the good news is if you're baseball, you've got 162 games in a regular season, which I think a lot of people, I'm not going to say most people, but I think a lot of people feel like is too long to begin with, myself included. So if you're baseball and you end up having to play, you know, an 80-game season, a 90-game season, maybe even a 100-game season, I don't think that's the end of the world. Like, I think I would honestly, number one, I'd be interested to see what you do at that point from a scheduling standpoint. How many games do you focus on trying to keep in the same leagues and in the same divisions? But I honestly, at the end of the day, I'd be kind of intrigued to see, you know, what a 90-game season or a 100-game season baseball season would look like.
Yeah, baseball's too long for me, personally.
Yeah.
I mean, 162 games is a lot. And, you know, I admire hardcore baseball fans who can watch as many games on as many days as the Major League Baseball schedule is. You know, how many days off does an MLB team have per month? Like three or four?
Three, maybe, yeah.
Right. I mean, I would be interested in how a 80-game season would work in Major League Baseball from a strategic standpoint, not just from a schedule standpoint, but, you know, how does that change how you use your pitchers and how does that change how you formulate your lineup? Like from a strategy X's and O's standpoint, I think that could be really interesting. I thought the most interesting story yesterday in Major League Baseball was the news that New York Mets pitcher Noah Syndergaard is going to have to undergo Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
And the first thought in many people's minds is that during the coronavirus pandemic, New York City, but I think it's happened in many places, but New York specifically has asked to ban non-essential surgeries. So the question was, well, is Tommy John surgery an essential operation? And the New York Post has a headline that says, no, Noah Syndergaard's Tommy John surgery doesn't violate coronavirus rules. And goes on to explain that the pitcher and team were told that Syndergaard has an acutely torn UCL with acute compression of the ulnar nerve. Syndergaard and the team were told, according to the source, that the condition fits the essential surgery guidelines. So that was interesting to me, was he needs this surgery, this Tommy John surgery, which is going to remove him from playing this season if it does happen, regardless. But is he violating the rules of non-essential surgery by having Tommy John surgery?
Yeah, certainly an interesting part of this. And I know Willie Donick of Darren Donick and Chase was just crushed yesterday when it came out that Noah Syndergaard was going to require Tommy John surgery.
It's very much like the Mets, to be the Mets even during a global pandemic.
Even during a global pandemic. The Mets, just bad things continually happening to the New York Mets. Got a text in on the text line for you, Adam. David Phelps is relieved that he can't relieve right now in the MLB. So there is a David Phelps connection somewhere along the line that you made earlier in the show.
I don't know why I said David Phelps. He's also a musician, according to Wikipedia. He's an American Christian music vocalist. So there's that,
David
too.
David Phelps seems like a fairly common name.
Right.
I'm sure there may be somebody listening right now named David Phelps.
If there is someone listening named David Phelps, text in. And I don't know if we have a prize for you, but I can come up with one.
Wow, look at you just
Maybe
throwing
my,
stuff out there.
My wife will give you a free haircut.
There you go. That's what we
need. If your name is David Phelps.
It is interesting when you look at it from a baseball standpoint, though, because – you know, all these other leagues, you're talking about ending the season with the NBA and the NHL. Or if you're the MLS or MLB and you're just now really getting your season fired up. I mean, pitchers and catchers and spring training was just kind of getting underway when all of this news started to come out with the NBA suspending their season, NHL following suit the next day. It is kind of interesting if you're the MLB. I think you can use this as an opportunity to kind of evaluate where your sport is. Maybe you get down the line and you're able to play 100, 110 game regular season and people really like it. Maybe that helps people with their interest in your game. You know, games feel like they mean a little bit more than they do in a 162 game season. I mean, that's my thing. Like 162 games, I don't really start paying attention heavily to baseball until like almost September, just because of everything going on. There's just so many games. I do wonder if how much of an objection the baseball purist would have when it comes to a 162-game season. Now, I don't think that MLB is ever going to be interested in cutting their games down to 100. I mean, I think that's too much. I mean, obviously, you've got the revenue that comes in with having 162 games. So, honestly, if they cut it down to like 154 or something like that, I would be surprised. I don't really anticipate them going much lower than that for no other reason than the revenue side of this argument. But I would be interested to see like what the baseball purist would think if this season takes place in the MLB and you have to play 100 games.
Jeff Passan of ESPN has this story, or at least part of a story, on ESPN.com, where he says, quote, MLB and the MLBPA have worked toward a potential agreement over the past 10 days on a number of issues, acknowledging the inevitability of a shortened season that both parties hope would begin by early June. It would guarantee players a prorated salary that would depend on the number of games played, according to sources. Now, here's the interesting part. Multiple players have told ESPN that they are willing to play a significant number of doubleheaders, as many as two a week, to make up for lost games and try to get as close to a full 162-game schedule as possible.
And that is something you can do in baseball that you really can't do in any other sport.
No.
Doubleheaders, I mean, we see that happen. You know, games get rained out all the time in an MLB season, and you have to play doubleheaders. Like, you can't play a doubleheader hockey game.
People Unless you're the Predators and Panthers during the preseason.
Yeah, and then I mean, that's one thing when you've got 75 people in training camp kind of skating around. But
yes,
that is interesting, and I hadn't really thought about that. But you could, if you're the MLB, use doubleheaders to your advantage. And that maybe you do get close. I still, if you're starting in June, maybe even late June, it's still going to be really tough at that point, I think, to get in 162 games. But if you can get close to that amount playing some doubleheaders along the way, that's certainly one way to go about it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I'm sure fans would like that. I mean, fans like to watch two games for the price of one, right? If you're going to be a fan, you're going to be have been cooped up in the house for months on end. No better way than to explore your new freedom than spending the day at the ballpark.
Yeah, like people may not – once we get away from this and we get past the coronavirus stuff, which is hopefully sooner rather than later, people are not going to return to their homes for like 6 days at a time. Like, they're just going to go out and they're going to be spending time at Waffle House doing all these different things they never thought they would do, just because they've been cooped up for so long.
I'm surprised you said Waffle House. I thought you would say Cracker Barrel.
Well, Cracker Barrel's not open 24/7, man.
Well, is Cracker Barrel still serving food? Are they doing curbside delivery and pickup?
I'm not sure. I'm sure that they were trying to do so, at least.
Are you having trout withdrawals by chance?
I'm having trout withdrawals. I've been cooped up in the house. I haven't had trout in a long time. So,
well, you live,
I'm sure Brandon Walker of the Predators enjoys that thoroughly.
You live in the country. I'm sure you could just take your fishing rod down to the stream and find your own trout.
I have a stream right next to my house right now.
That's what I'm saying.
It may happen at the end of the day.
That's
what
I'm saying.
We finally got some good weather today, or at least we're supposed to have some good weather today. Right now I'm looking outside my house, and it's gray, but at least it's not raining. Because honestly, Adam, I felt like the last few months, like we've lived in Seattle. Like, there's been rain all the time. And I think today it's just going to be 63 and cloudy in my neck of the woods. Tomorrow it's going to be in the 80s, Friday in the 80s as well. That's more like it. That's when I think – you know, part of this quarantine at the house stuff, a lot of it has been you've been forced to be cooped up inside because it's been raining outside. If we could get a little sunshine and at least be outdoors at our own home, maybe that will lift the mood of people around the nation,
yeah,
especially around our city.
Yeah, tomorrow is supposed to be close to 80 degrees and sunny. So if you're looking to get outside, tomorrow would be the best time to do it. Of course, practice social distancing. Stay at least 6 feet away from everybody else. I'm thinking about creating this apparatus that, like, attaches to my waist that stretches out 6 feet on either end, and then just walking down the street so that nobody can come within 6 feet. Otherwise, they'll get knocked over. Do you think that?
Yeah.
Do you think that could sell? Do you think I could patent that? Maybe go.
Oh, I think people are already doing this.
Oh.
I think around the world, people have like invented these contraptions with like yardsticks and rulers sticking out that measure off a 6 foot radius around them, and if you come in contact with them, you're getting hit by some sort of object. So I think you relate to the party on that idea, my friend.
Well, if I can get on Shark Tank with it, then it's not a problem. Maybe I can get Mark Cuban on FaceTime and pitch him the idea.
When we come back, there is a story out there that came out yesterday that kind of epitomizes the pathetic, just how pathetic the NCAA is. I want to get into that next with Adam. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic. And Adam, there was a crazy story yesterday regarding Trevor Lawrence, of course, the quarterback at Clemson and projected to be maybe the number one overall pick in next season's NFL draft. And he came out yesterday and announced that he, along with his girlfriend Marissa Mowry, who's a soccer player at Anderson University, had launched a GoFundMe page to help raise money for victims that have suffered from the coronavirus and, you know, family relief and support. And obviously Trevor Lawrence has a huge platform, a huge following in the world of college football, so it would have put a lot of attention and a lot of eyeballs on raising money for these coronavirus victims. And yesterday a story comes out that basically the Clemson compliance department learned about the page and asked him to take it down based on their interpretation of the NCAA policy, which of course does not allow for the use of name, image, and likeness for crowdfunding. So you look at that and it's just one of those things where just the craziness of these NCAA rules sometimes that just totally abandon common sense. Now, to their credit, the NCAA has come out since then and has given Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend the okay to move ahead with this GoFundMe page and have lifted kind of their restrictions based on this instance here with the coronavirus. They've moved ahead and given Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend an exception to move forward with the GoFundMe page. But the fact that this was even a conversation at any point yesterday, to me, just speaks of how ludicrous and sometimes just flat out crazy the NCAA is in terms of getting in their own way with some of these restrictions that they place on their athletes.
Well, I think the NCAA deserves a bit of credit for at least granting the waiver or waiving the restrictions in this particular case. And Clemson put out a statement last night. Quote, in light of current circumstances surrounding COVID-19, the NCAA reached out to Clemson Athletics this evening, informing us that they are waiving restrictions that had been in place and are now allowing institutions to utilize discretion with respect to fundraising efforts. We applaud and appreciate their swift action in permitting this activity to help people in a time of need. So I'll give the NCAA credit for realizing that wasn't the best idea for them not to allow perhaps the face of the college football world at this time not to do something charitable for people who are suffering from coronavirus. And then it goes, of course, back into the larger conversation about athletes and should they be willing to. And, I mean, it's not happening in this specific case because Trevor Lawrence is doing something philanthropic, but it goes back into the conversation of whether NCAA athletes should be able to profit off of their likenesses. I agree that they should in some fashion, but at least in this case, you know, they did not stay in their own way for very long. At least they were able to reverse course in a swift enough fashion.
Yes, and certainly I'm glad that they have done that, because can you imagine what the conversation would be like today and would look like today if you're the NCAA? And word comes out that Clemson's quarterback and basically, like you said, the face of college football from a player perspective at the moment is doing his part and is coming out trying to raise money to combat coronavirus and help out with people who have suffered from this pandemic. And you come out today and the restriction hasn't been lifted and you're still not allowed to do it. I mean, the NCAA would just be getting crushed today. So I think they realized that. They also realized that there's a big difference between, you know, profiting personally off of some of these things and maybe some charitable things that you don't really know exactly where the money is going to. With this, you know exactly where it's going to, and it's helping victims of coronavirus. So certainly I think the look, if this decision was upheld by the NCAA and they didn't reverse course on this, they would just be getting absolutely destroyed today.
Yes, and according to The Athletic, the goal of the GoFundMe was set at $20,000, and it was shared. Right. The link was shared on Instagram, where Lawrence and his girlfriend have more than 500,000 combined followers. It says by 5:50 p.m. Eastern Monday, it had $1,215. At 6:40, that number was $2,485. It was stopped at $2,670. when the NCAA stepped in. So when you have a player like Trevor Lawrence, you know, who has such a platform, you know, you should use that to your advantage at times like this. I mean, we talked about, you know, some of the other charitable endeavors that we have tried to do, our followings pale in comparison to Trevor Lawrence, who yes. is going to be the number one pick, presumably, in the NFL draft when he is ready to go pro. You know, so the NCAA, you know, should be doing their part. I mean, I also wonder, you know, I'm just curious, as you said, what that conversation was like in the NCAA office. Like, well, Clemson shut down Trevor Lawrence's charitable endeavor, and then like how long it took for them to realize this is going to be a bad look
probably
for us.
Probably a bad idea.
Yeah, you know, this is probably going to be a bad look for us if we don't do something about it. So this is one of the few instances where I will applaud the NCAA for doing something right and making sure that Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend were able to help those in need.
Now, the glass half full approach to this situation, I think, is if you're the Clemson compliance department, and if you're Trevor Lawrence, I think especially, this has drawn a lot of attention now that this situation has come up. Now that Clemson came out, the compliance department asked him to stop. The NCAA then allowed him to do it. I think that's drawn more attention to it. So maybe at the end of the day, Trevor Lawrence will end up raising more money out of this because more people are aware of it. I mean, we're sitting here in Nashville, Tennessee, talking about it on our show right now, where otherwise, had it not been shut down, we may or may not have even known about it. So from that standpoint, maybe some good can come out of it. The NCAA reverses the decision, and we're sitting here talking about it, and it's been a national story the last day or so.
Yeah, sometimes, as we like to say, any publicity is good publicity. I imagine that Trevor Lawrence, who has, as we mentioned, a significant following, would have been able to generate enough publicity on his own, that combined with his girlfriend as well, who has a sizable following. But the NCAA, or Clemson, stepping in, and then the NCAA stepping in on their accord, certainly made this a news story where people who may not be following Clemson or college football will see what he's doing and donate more money. So perhaps, as you said, there is a silver lining in this that while the NCAA and Clemson looked a little bit silly for a little while, perhaps that $20,000 goal that Trevor Lawrence has set will be met faster because of it.
Now, I saw a story this morning, Adam, when I first woke up regarding Carl Anthony Towns of the Timberwolves, and basically it's come out that his mother has the coronavirus, and right now she is on a ventilator, and he was just kind of talking about it in a pretty emotional message, just his mother contracting the disease, everything that's gone on with that, and urging people to continue to stay inside, to continue to practice social distancing. And I know locally we've had a few stories here of people in our area contracting the disease as well that I've heard about. And it's one of those things where, you know, I think it's human nature that, you know, you hear these stories around the country and it certainly impacts you. And I think you recognize the seriousness of it. But then it connects, I think, on a different level when you see, like, firsthand, whether it's the video that Carl Anthony Towns shared or whether it's some of the stories you've heard here locally. I think it connects on a different level at that point when you just see how devastating the coronavirus has been and can continue to be if we don't all do our part to help out around the country here.
And I think the one thing, the one misconception that is starting to be erased over the past several days is that this is not just an illness that is affecting older people. I mean, this is an illness that is affecting everybody. Yeah. We talked about earlier the bro who spit in the face of coronavirus by going to spring break and then even issued an apology on Twitter. I mean, yesterday, L.A. County reported that an 18-year-old died because of coronavirus, which I believe is the youngest person in the United States, or at least definitely one of the youngest, to die because of coronavirus. I mean, it can happen to anybody. And I know a lot of the attention has been on the older generation and those that have underlying conditions that can be worsened because of coronavirus, but it also affects people our age and younger. And I think the benefit, I mean, it's awful what's happened. I want to preface this by saying it's awful that Carl Anthony Towns is going through this and having someone in his family go through this. But I think athletes have done a really good job of expressing, using their platforms to express the danger that this coronavirus does inflict upon people of all ages. So hopefully people will see Karl Anthony Towns, who is a rising star in the NBA, dealing with this in his family and take precautions. So I do think the sports world at large, particularly high-profile athletes, have done a good job of getting the message out there in ways that perhaps others, politicians, perhaps people who are younger aren't going to listen to their governor or their congressman or the president. Right. But if their favorite athlete is saying stay inside and be and protect yourself, perhaps they'll listen to that message more so than from someone in the government. So I do think that the sports world does deserve credit for what they've been doing.
And even yesterday I saw where Nick Saban came out in Alabama and had a message that he wanted to get out there too about social distancing.
And Marquise definitely listened to that one, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I listened to it before I went to bed. It was my alarm clock this morning, especially the part where he said Roll Tide at the end. Yeah, I loved it. Loved it all.
Nick Saban, the most powerful voice in the state of Alabama.
See, that's what Nick Saban needs to just do a video and say, hey, stay home, Alabama. Everybody will stay home.
Yeah, they will.
Well, needs to do a video from his – he needs to do a version of his interview with Maria Taylor where he's basically like you want to go outside your house? It's not going to happen, so quit asking.
That would be great.
That would be awesome.
Something about that. Something like that.
When we come back, John Glennon from The Athletic will join us. We'll get into what the Titans have done in free agency and maybe what they still could do in free agency. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vinken here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.